You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff, back here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. And, well, we're not exactly where we hope to be in terms of this baseball season getting underway, but in a sense, we are where we expected to be in that Jim and Jonathan, you guys are headed off to spring training soon. In fact, well, Jonathan, you're already there. And
right. I am indeed. First day of camp for me today in sunshiny Florida.
Yeah, coming to us live from where are you right now? Tampa?
We'll call it Tampa.
Okay.
Yes,
Tampa. Jonathan is on his exact location known for some reason, apparently.
So, yeah, and then Jim headed to, I don't have our calendar or our schedule in front of me. You're headed
I'm a couple weeks away.
Arizona?
Yes.
Only, right? And then Sam Dykstra going to be doing a stint in Florida and Arizona. So we are going to hit each spring training camp and bring you a prospecty spring training report for all 30 teams over the course of this month. So be on the lookout for those. And as we said, Jonathan started us off in Yankees camp and did an interview with Yankees Director of Player Development, Kevin Reese, going to talk about Anthony Volpe, Jason Dominguez, Austin Wells, some of the early standouts at Yankees camp. And then we are going to look ahead to the 2022 minor league season because we know that is getting underway as scheduled. Opening day for AAA on April 5th. And then a few days later, the rest of the levels join in the fun. And we're getting ready for that. And we're going to look ahead at some prospects who have something to prove in 2022. Or if you want to put it a little more gently, guys we think will rebound, poised to rebound in 2022, or aiming to rebound in 2022. Is that more like it?
Yeah, I think aiming doesn't imply that they're definitely going to bounce back.
Jim, you suggested a faith meter. We could,
we could spark some outrage and like how much we believe each of the players on here. Like, you know, because we do our 30 team story, one for each team. And I'm not going to single anybody out, but I think there's at least 1 to 10 guys I wrote up that I have like kind of a one or two would be my faith in him bouncing back.
Let me see if I can dust off the old faith meter and get that working for that segment.
Some cool sound effects with that.
Yeah, Ryan, we need some faith meter sound effects.
It will not be a guy I'm talking about in that segment, however. So I have faith in the two guys I will be discussing. So
that's better. All right. We are going to talk a little bit about draft prospects, the college baseball season. We'll talk Tommy Tanks, the story of college baseball so far in the early going, guys.
I think it's fair to say.
Yep.
Sure.
Tommy White.
National attention.
Yeah. And then coming up this weekend, we have the Shriners Children's College Classic in Houston, which is loaded with some of the best teams in the nation and a handful of top 100 draft prospects. So we'll preview that as well. And we'll wrap up, as we always do, by answering a question from the mailbag. So, Jonathan, in or around, we think, he won't tell us, Tampa, you had a chance to speak to Kevin Reese, farm director of the Yankees. You are headed. How long are you in Florida for this trip?
10 camps in 10 days.
10 camps in 10 days. And you have, so tell us a little bit about what you're doing when you're there and what this is going to, what this is going to generate for the folks to see on.
Sure. I think we started this a few years ago. When we would kind of piggyback on the MLB Network's 30 camps and 30 days and do some prospect segments with them. And then we would, you know, kind of get to go hit our favorite people on the minor league side of camps and get a chance to talk to the farm director, you know, get an overview of how camp is going, you know, get some ideas on people who've stood out, you know, across the board, any themes that are running. And then also, you know, do a Q&A with a prospect in each camp. So, you know, started today as we record on, you know, Thursday with Yankees camp, and I'll make my way down the west coast of Florida and finish up with the Twins and Red Sox in Fort Myers when all is said and done. And it's a great opportunity because, listen, we talk to farm directors all the time. And I think the two things that happen, you know, we split up which teams we do for top 30 lists, but we can't really arrange the spring training schedule to only see the teams that we do. So it's a chance to actually talk to farm directors that we don't spend as much time with. You know, for instance, I don't do the Yankees list, Jim does. So getting to sit down with Kevin Reese, it was nice, you know, for me. And then, you know, getting FaceTime with the prospects as well. There are no games going on yet this week. By the time Jim goes to Arizona, there'll be minor league games to watch. So there were just workouts today, some live BPs, things like that. It's just exciting to, you know, be out in the warm sunshine watching baseball activities. So that's fine. You know, the games by and large, I think, are starting across the board at some point in mid-March.
And you are starting off big, hitting the Yankees, Tigers, Blue Jays. So you're going to, you know, we've got what, probably four of the top 10-ish prospects in the game in those camps, and Jason Dominguez as well. Pretty exciting start to your trip.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Saw Jason Dominguez take a few swings today. He's very strong. Anthony Volpe actually tweeted out a little video of him taking some BP off of a machine, getting some early work. And that was fun because I've actually not seen Anthony Volpe swing a bat since he and Del Barton prep came with Jack Leiter to be in the NHSI a few years ago. So it was nice to see him. And, you know, he was a scrawny 17-year-old, I think, at the time awaiting his senior year. And he is definitely not a kid anymore. And I know they're very excited about him in Yankee land based on what he did last year.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll hear what Kevin Reese has to say about Anthony Volpe, Jason Dominguez, Austin Wells, and some other guys at Yankees camp. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Kevin, let's just start with, you know, maybe I'll start specific on a few guys and then we can sort of run it out a little bit. But I mean, I think the guy that everyone is buzzing about, obviously, is Anthony Volpe. Can you see, you know, a difference in him just from having that year of success?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him and I know you spoke with him a couple years ago, and just seeing him mature, I think that's one of the best parts of this job, is seeing guys come in, whether it's out of high school or college, or, you know, coming from the Latin American countries where you see a kid and then one day you see a man. And I think that happened during this past season. You know, I think even first round picks walk in and it's a different environment. You know, you're not playing against high school kids anymore. You're playing against 24, 25, 26 year olds. You're competing against major league guys sometimes. So there might be some doubt that creeps in there at some point, but he showed that exactly where he belongs and I think opened a lot of eyes throughout the game. But very mature guy, both on and off the field, way he goes about his work, all those things, you know, they really jump out to you when you watch him work.
For a kid who played at a small prep school in New Jersey, I mean, like, I used to play against that school in high school. Has he been better, faster than people expected?
I think it just depends on who you're asking. If you ask our amateur scouting department, like they saw it all along. You know, you I think those guys really get to know the player and again, know that work ethic and you know, the family that he came from and things like that. So I don't think it surprises them. I think the power came around a little bit quicker than we expected last year. His body's matured physically. He's stronger than he was a couple years ago. I think he really took advantage of the 2020, you know, the downtime. And those guys, it really showed up.
That was a sort of more general question, and I'll put that in now, just in terms of, you know, I've been saying kind of as I've talked to other farm directors and things like that, I think it's really individual for almost each player what that 2020 did. For Anthony, because you just don't know who's going to show up, right? Whether it was Instructs at 2020 or whatever, right. Whenever you had laid eyes on him, clearly he just got to work, and it translated to on the field performance. As a farm director, like coming out of that, was it hard just to sort of get a sense of who was where?
I give a ton of credit to our coaches and our coordinating staff because they, you know, teamed up each player with a coach. We did everything we could, whether it was Zoom meetings, whether it was exchanging video back and forth, you know, to make sure guys were on the right track. But at the end of the day, it was really up to that player to kind of control what they were doing and you know, what they were doing, you know, with regard to nutrition in the weight room. And on the field. So I think we did a nice job of that. And by we, I say our players and our staff to kind of keep on top of things and give guys objectives and things to work on without having the games to guide them. In some ways, I think that was a benefit because, you know, when as a former player, it was really hard to work on things in season. You know, you're just like, hey, I'm competing every night. It's do or die. And, you know, you can talk about or you can do some things in BP, you can talk about it in pregame, but when the light goes on, you're just in survival mode. And so I think that was advantageous to some guys to be able to really focus in on certain objectives and things that they were working on and then take it into games a year later.
I think after Volpe, the guy that most people probably want to talk about is Jason Dominguez. And it's an interesting to see, like, so he first shows up and he's Superman, right? He could do everything. And then he doesn't dominate every at-bat, every inning. And suddenly, like, I don't want to say his star has faded because that's unfair, but it just seemed that people kind of backed off that's the Superman thing. You know, I know I've seen some reports and stories that he's come into camp, he's big, strong. I mean, all the things that he did. Like, what did you see with how he dealt with last year? Because one of the things I've heard about him is, yes, the tools are ridiculous, but also his makeup and how he goes about it is really good. So maybe the little bit of scuffling was good for him.
Yeah, you know, I can't put myself in the shoes of somebody that's, you know, at the age of 14, 15, 16, has, you know, YouTube followers and Twitter followers, and everybody's talked about him, these nicknames and comparisons and things like that. But I think the people that he surrounded himself with, whether it's his agency, whether it's, you know, some of the kids that he hangs out with, I think have helped him to handle those situations. And I haven't seen, I've been around enough guys, former teammates of mine, players that have come through here that you see those expectations and you see it really wear on them. But I think he embraces it every day. I think he believes in himself. He believes in his work. Some guys just rely on like, oh, it's gonna shake out. But I think he goes out every day and says, I'm going to try to get better. So I haven't seen that where it looks like it's affecting him. I don't think there was anything. I think even if he would have gone out and had the same year that Anthony Volpe had, people would have been like, oh, well, but he only got to high A. You know, he didn't get to the big leagues. Like, he's supposed to be there already. So the expectations were, I think, a little out of control from the beginning. And our goal is to have, you know, guys have successful big league careers. And sometimes that takes some speed bumps, and it sometimes takes some twists and turns and some adjustments that need to be made. So I think it was probably good for him to have a little bit of a challenging season where now he might embrace some things that we were trying to present to him a little quicker. And so far, so good in 2022.
What's something about him that's surprised you? I mean, because there's so, like, everyone's talked about, and, you know, I like to tease Jim Callis, who I know you've talked to a lot, because he's not one for hyperbole, but he's reporting what multiple scouts said and throwing, like, these ridiculous you know, Mickey Mantle, Mike Trout, you know, whatever you want to say. Like, but what's something that surprised you about him since he's been here?
I don't know if it surprises me that much, but just his competitiveness. And that even goes on to the fact that he stood right here a couple days ago and did an interview in English. Like, they compete in English class. They compete, you know, in the weight room. They compete on the bases. They compete in batting practice. And just, you know, I mean, it's a personality that, like, you're drawn towards. He's smiling most of the time. He's joking with guys. I think sometimes as a player, like, if I was a 27th round draft pick, like, I walk around the first round or the guy who signs for $5 million, you're a little bit intimidated, but he brings everybody in and brings everybody together.
Now, that is a good – I think that probably speaks to his ability to handle all that hype. Like you said, other guys that initially would show up and be like, all right, I've got this figured out, and then the second they hit that bump, the wheels come off.
Yeah, for sure.
Want to ask you about Austin Wells. I saw him in the fall league. You know, for a guy coming off of a full year of catching and everything, the fact that he had anything left in the tank was pretty impressive. You know, the bat, obviously, I think is going to get him to the big leagues. Where is he defensively in your eyes?
He made some major improvements, you know, from when he walked through the door to the end of the season last year and the end of the fall league. If you ask our catching coordinator, like, who's been working and, you know, who's made the most improvement, I think he's the first name that comes up. And that improvement has gotten him to where we think he's, you know, a solid receiver. You know, even at the big league level, his arm strength has improved to the point where it fits in at the big league level. We don't really have concerns on the catching side, like some people who I've read, you know, different things about and whatnot. So I joke with him because, like, if you look at him, if you saw him walking through the mall, you'd be like, that's a baseball player. Like, he just looks like a baseball player. And I think, you know, whether it's the way he wears his uniform, but also the way, you know, he wears whatever and just, like, his presence, you just think, man, that guy, you know, whether it's in the cage, working behind the plate, you know, and again, like, the environment that our staff has created here where it's very competitive between each other, like, you know that Austin Wells is competing against Antonio Gomez, but they compete together and they push each other. There's been a lot of good compliments from the other catchers as well as the way he goes about it.
There was an at-bat he had in the fall league that really kind of spoke to who he is as a hitter. And he hit a huge homer it got them to get a chance to play for the championship. If I don't remember if I have the timing right, but basically one of the coaches told them that whoever was pitching likes to throw a first pitch slider or first pitch changeup, but I don't remember the exact. It was a secondary, so he looked for it and he hit it, I don't know, 430 feet and hit it out. So to me, like, there's one thing to hear that information. It's another thing to actually process it and put it to use almost instantaneously. I mean, that kind of sums up what he's able to do at the plate, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of times when people – Some scouts or coaches don't necessarily know when they say this guy's an advanced hitter. Like, that can mean different things to different people. But that, what you just described, is what that means to me. Like, somebody who can go, okay, like, I know what this guy's trying to do. I know what his strengths are. He might know what my weaknesses are, but I can still take advantage of it in certain counts or in certain situations. So guys that can do damage on both fastballs and off-speed pitches, guys who can, you know, take advantage of mistakes, even if it's a quality pitch in a bad spot for the pitcher. Those are the types of things that I think make an advanced hitter, and that's Austin.
Let me open it back up. If you remember, you know, we do in our spring training report just a section on camp standouts. You know, so maybe beyond the sort of those big three, because we've kind of discussed them. Now, if Anthony Volpe is clearly head and shoulders, then that's fine. But, like, you know, chance to shine a light on maybe some other guys who have really shown up, and, you know, at least in this early going, you know, while we're talking here, you haven't started any games yet or anything like that. But, like, who's really stood out to you?
Yeah, so we mostly have a lot of a camp going on in the DR right now as well. So a lot of our drafted players are here right now. Will Warren is a pitcher from last year's draft who's looked really good. The guys who I think made some huge strides last year, Hayden Wesneski, Ken Waldachuk, they've looked awesome.
Can you like dig in a little bit more?
Yeah. Waldy's kind of, when I think most people that saw him last year would say, hey, he's got a big fastball, breaking ball's decent. May need to develop a third pitch in order to be a starter. He showed one of the best changeups out here. competing against our own hitters. But that was, like, for me, a wow moment. Like, okay, like that's what he needs to make that next step, and he's working on it. And it looked like a really good pitch, and a pitch that can help him, you know, attack right-handed hitters in the future. Wesneski's just a really good competitor. His velocity continues to trend up. He's got like a 5-pitch mix, and I think that's going to bode well for he sniffed AAA towards the end of the season, and will look good going into this season. Will Warren's velo has really trended. I mean, he had some velo in college, but continued to trend up and working on some secondary stuff. And, you know, we get the opportunity in these situations to talk to the hitters, like, hey, who's the toughest guy you faced so far? And that's a name that continues to jump out. On the position player side, a couple guys from recent drafts, Elijah Dunham, who you probably saw in the fall league as well. Another guy that's just like, man, that guy's a baseball player, but he could also look like a football player or whatever. He's kind of a warrior type guy that gives 100% effort all the time. He came in really good shape.
Yeah, I liked him in the fall.
He's running well. He had I want to say he got caught stealing like once in 25 or 30 attempts last year, like over the fall league and the regular season. Really, really impressive. In that regard, because we thought, hey, this is probably a corner guy that's just going to thump a little bit. So that was a bonus. Cooper Bowman from last year's draft. Trey Sweeney looks really good. Another guy, like, we do all kinds of different defensive drills that challenge your range and challenge your ability to make throws from tough positions and things like that. And both those guys excel in those drills.
That's good. Some guys. Good. I think I'm thinking, like, I may start talking about the hitters, and then, like, oh yeah, there are pitchers here too. Tell me a little bit about the camp in the DR. Like, what's going on there?
Similarly, you know, we're just trying to get guys ready for spring training. Like, it's funny because, you know, back in the day, it was always like, all right, guys are just going to show up on, you know, March 5th or whatever, and like, hopefully they're in shape, hopefully they're whatever. You know, now we're starting to ramp up particularly pitchers a little bit earlier. And we, you know, we try to look at development as a year-round opportunity more so than just like, hey, let's get them for the season and see what happens. So it's very similar. I know you haven't seen too much out here, but you know, we got hitters working. We got some defensive stuff going on in the mornings. We got pitchers rolling out. We'll have some live BPs and we've already started some inter-squads. So it's a very similar camp. You know, we have a full allotment of staff down there. And then those guys will roll up. I think actually they fly tomorrow with kind of physicals and stuff going over the weekend, and Monday we'll be kicking off.
You getting any reports on guys from down there who, like, were like, whoa, all right, maybe this guy's going to take a bigger step forward than, because that's especially in age, that age, like, you talk about guys who, they're kids and then they're men, like, that teenage, 17, 18, whatever, like, that can happen overnight, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, Arias is the guy that everybody's talking about. You know, just, I think some guys come in at 16 and you're like, oh, that's a kid. And some guys come in at 16, like a Jason, and like, oh, that's a man's body, you know. And Arias looks like a physical guy that can do a little bit of everything on the field. I'm trying to think of who else has been.
You can dig into Arias a little bit more. People probably want to hear about him.
Yeah. Defensively, a guy with big range and, you know, a huge arm. That's probably one of the things that really jumps out about him. Offensively, showing, again, for a 16-year-old guy, a guy that can use the whole field and drive the ball for power. So, I don't know. Yeah. That's what you're looking for,
especially when
you get a young kid.
Yeah, so. Seriously. Who's a guy, and maybe it's Arias, like a prospect that isn't on the radar as much, which is hard in the New York market, I understand, but who we're going to be talking about in 2023 or 2024?
Give me a second to think.
Yeah, no, think about it. I mean, it's in some ways, it's like, who's going to be Anthony Volpe, who, like, everyone's like, hey, he was a first rounder, but that surprised some people. And it can be a draft guy, it can be a guy in the DR.
I think Antonio Gomez has a chance to be that guy. I mean, he's got some prospect buzz going already, but I watch Gary Sanchez come through here, and this guy throws as well as Gary. Really good body, takes care of himself, shows some power, you know, had some success at low A last year, and is a guy that we look to kind of continue to make that stride and might be able to jump a level or two as we go into the season. We've done a nice job. Like, last year, my answer to that question was probably Hayden Wesneski, and And, you know, he started in high A last year, performed really, really well there, then did well in double A and ended up in triple A. And I mean, I think that we always look for those, you know, those top picks to show up and look like top picks. But I think especially, I mean, probably more so far on the pitching side, we've had a lot of guys that were low level draft picks or, you know, lower money signs internationally that have been able to make some big jumps and right. have some success.
Tell me about Gomez's the offensive side. We talked about the catching. But...
Yeah. I mean, high-end exit velo, quality at-bats versus both left and right. You know, always working on making better swing decisions, always working on making more contact, but huge impact. And I think he hasn't really filled into his man body yet. But it's a good body and something that we think we can add more muscle to.
Last one for you, and maybe this is tough, you know, tougher for a farm director to answer, but sometimes we'll put in a who has something to prove. You know, it could be as simple as a guy coming off of injury, but maybe it's someone who scuffled or started to figure something out in the last month, and you want to see how it carries over. You know, you could, it's kind of open ended in that way.
One name that jumps out on that front is Matt Sauer. He was a second round pick, had some injury stuff, and came back last year and kind of showed the big stuff, but didn't necessarily put it all together. He's made some strides early on, and you know, working on a secondary pitch to go with the big velo that he's got. His slider looks like it's improved quite a bit. So that's a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, depending on where he starts, he moves up a level or two as we go because it's all in there.
Great.
My thanks again to Kevin Reese for spending some time with me in Yankees minor league camp today. Jim, you do the Yankees list. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting, as much attention as those big bats get, like Anthony Volpe and Jason Dominguez, kind of intriguing hearing about the sort of later round big arm pitchers who seem to all be taking significant steps forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've done a really good job in the draft. I mean, I think a lot of their more famous pitchers in the past have been their international prospects, but you get a guy like Ken Waldichuk in the fifth round a couple of years ago, Hayden Wesneski in the sixth round. Both those guys are, you know, right there. You know, you can make a case for either one of them being the best pitching prospect in the system. Kevin mentioned like kind of everybody's I think favorite sleeper in the organization is a kid named Will Warren, who they got in the later rounds of last year's draft, who's added 15 or 20 pounds and he's already touching 98. But the Yankees, you know, scouting department led by Damon Oppenheimer have done a really good job of finding pitchers like that. And I'll admit, I chuckled, Jonathan, when you asked Kevin about, you know, whether people saw this coming with Anthony Volpe, or if he got, you know, he was better quicker than people thought. And Kevin said, well, you know, our amateur scouting department believed this all along. And that is true, because at the scouting combine last year, Damon Oppenheimer good naturedly was giving me a hard time for being, you know, that we did not have Anthony Volpe in our top 100 at that point. And he's like, I'm telling you, he's a better prospect. And they asked people around, he's a better prospect than Jason Dominguez. I was like, really? He's that much better this quick? And Damon was insisting that was the case and proved to be correct.
All right. Our thanks to Kevin Reese for joining us. And we are going to take a quick break, come back, and look at some prospects who have something to prove this season. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We are just about a month away from the minor league baseball season, which is very exciting. Now, this week we are working on a story. It may be up by the time you listen to this, story on a prospect from each team who has something to prove this year or who is aiming to bounce back. So guys, these are, as you put your list of names together, which sort of categories did these guys mostly fall into in terms of why they're on this list?
It seemed to me like it was, if I was going to put most of them into two buckets, it would be injured pitchers and disappointing hitters. It seemed like that was the vast majority of mine. I guess one disappointing pitcher, but most of my guys fell into one of those two categories. How about you, John?
Yeah, I was going to say injured guys, to broaden it, because I did have a couple of hitters who were coming off of injuries also. But I think I had more disappointing hitters than anything else.
All right. Well, that's fitting because, Jim, you're going to talk about two pitchers. And Jonathan, you're going to talk about two hitters. Jim, let's continue our Yankee theme here for just a bit. Yankee talk.
Yeah, TJ Sikkema, left-hander in the Yankee system. He was a supplemental first-round pick in 2019 when he led the SEC and ranked third in the nation in ERA at Missouri. Yet another potential big league pitcher out of Missouri. And I had area scouts love this guy. They thought he had some of the best feel for pitching and best makeup in the entire draft. And, he came into pro ball, didn't have him pitch a whole lot, but, 11 pretty dominant innings in the New York Penn League, which now no longer exists, but was short season level at the time. And he hasn't pitched since then between the pandemic layoff. And then last year, he just had shoulder issues that they played very cautiously. He hasn't pitched at all in the last 2 years, but he's healthy now. He's gotten into better shape. His girlfriend is a nutritionist, so that, I guess, always helps. And, he's a guy who can vary his arm angle and the shape of his pitches and the velocity on the pitches. And before he got hurt and kind of disappeared for 2 years, or at least from game action, Yankees officials were kind of likening him to like a lefty version of El Duque. And he's just very, very confident. He's not a soft tosser, but he'll sit, low 90s most of the time. But he just goes after hitters and puts the ball where he wants and attacks them. And, the Yankees think that this is a guy who could move. They thought when they drafted him, he was going to move very quickly. And now that he's healthy again, he could start to do that.
All right, Jonathan, hit us with an outfielder who is looking to prove something this year.
Yeah, Jordan Adams of the Angels is a guy who I think fits this category really, really well. Super athletic, could have played college football had he wanted to. Snuck up on some people as a first round pick, and the thing that was interesting is that there was an expectation because he had not faced a ton of top competition that he would struggle when he first got into pro ball. And what was encouraging is that in 2019, he got challenged and went to full season ball and held his own, had a really good approach at the plate, drew a bunch of walks. He's got plus, top of the scale kind of speed. He was learning how to use it. He was turning into a good center fielder. And then the 2020 shutdown happened. And that hurt him, because I think he was a guy who probably, just needs reps, a lot of them, and came back in 2021 and just lost his approach, became a lot more free swinging, 116 strikeouts against 28 walks. The gains he was making in terms of tapping into some raw power weren't there, still ran the bases well and was a plus defender in center. So I think this is a year that he needs to really kind of get back to that approach, getting on base. And I think, the other things may come to the fore, but, he's still super young, right? So I'm not too worried about him. He'll be 22 for all of this season. So there's time for him to right the ship, but I do think that this is a year for him to show that 2019 was the foundation he can build on and not 2021.
All right. Before we go back to you for a right-hander, Jim, you hit on a left-hander to start. We forgot to get your faith meter readings on these guys.
Oh, that's right. I'll go 8 out of 10 on TJ Sikkema. I could almost go higher, but you know, there was no surgery involved. You know, if he's healthy, I just really believe in his ability to pitch. So I will go 8 out of 10 on TJ Sikkema.
All right, and Jonathan, Jordan Adams.
I'm going to go 6 out of 10. I think he has some tools there. Excuse me. I get choked up talking about Jordan Adams. he has some tools there to work with, but there's not a whole lot of track record to go on other than that 2019 season, which was good, but not great. So I'll say 6 out of 10.
All right. Now to you, Jim, for your righty.
Yeah, I'll go with Ricky Venasco, the Rangers, who was really in the discussion to be the Ranger, you know, is whether or not he was the Rangers' best pitching prospect before he blew out his elbow literally in the last game at the Rangers' alternate training site in 2020. So he had Tommy John surgery that September, missed last season, came back in the instructional league. And, you know, interesting development story with him even before he got hurt. You know, he was a 15th round pick, you know, signed over slot, but $200,000. It wasn't like a huge overslot bonus back in 2017. And the Rangers just loved his arm speed. Even though he's throwing 88 to 92 miles an hour in high school, they thought he was going to throw a lot harder. And then his pro debut, I don't know why I'm laughing because it's not that funny. He got concussed when Sam Huff, who's got like just a cannon for an arm, hit him in the head on a throw down to second base. So he didn't get to pitch much in 2017. But, you know, once he got going, he really broke out in 2019. It's mid-90s, up to 99. He has like a power hammer curveball when it's on. He showed that stuff again in instructional league last year. You know, he's only 23 years old, but he's also only worked 83 innings in pro ball. You know, he needs some polish. He, you know, needs to throw more strikes, needs to work on a changeup. He's making some progress with. But the faith meter very high on Ricky Venasco as well. I'd say 8 out of 10 that he's going to get back to where he was. And, you know, I mean, we still need to see if he can develop some polish, just cause he hasn't had much of a chance to pitch yet.
All right. And Jonathan, another outfielder for you.
Is it just me or is Optimist Jim just very unsettling?
Well, I mean, I do have guys on that I wrote up that I'm not going to name. I told you there's one of these guys that I would give a 1 out of 10 faith meter to that he's going to bounce back.
Thank you.
Not
gonna... I needed you to restore balance in the universe a little bit on the podcast officially, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, so listeners/readers, check out that story on 30 players aiming to bounce back next year and see which of Jim's 10 players you think gets that 1 faith meter reading.
It's the one that's written, I don't really believe this, but.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. See, both these guys, it was easy to have faith in because it's not that they didn't perform well last year. They were hurt. If I'd gone with one of my non-performing bats, the faith would have been lower than 8 out of 10.
Yeah, there's a hint. All right, Jonathan.
There you go. All right, so I am going to a non-performing bat, and that's Austin Hendrick, who's the Reds' first rounder. From 2020, from my neck of the woods in Pittsburgh, kind of mercurial, even as an amateur. I think we talked about this, you know, in the past, you know, leading up to that draft, even the summer before he was in the PDP league. And I think, you know, Jim did the first stretch of the PDP league. And if that was the only time you ever saw Austin Hendrick, you may have thought he should be the number one pick, you know, in the draft because you couldn't get him out and everything he hit was hard. And then I saw him the second part and he tinkered with the swing and I think he had one hit, you know, in the time that I was down there. So there's a ridiculous amount of raw power, tremendous bat speed. He can hit the ball out anywhere. And I think what happened is, he got sent out to full season ball, dealt with some injuries. He only played 63 games and then, but never got himself going. He did draw some walks, but struck out a lot, 100 strikeouts in 266 plate appearances. So I think basically what happened is he was a guy who just too much tried to sell out for power. you know, he needed the reps. He could have used that first summer of you know, Arizona complex ball or whatever, had that been a thing back in 2020. You know, he kind of just was going for launch angle and pulling the ball too much. And this is a guy who can hit the ball out anywhere. And so if he can go back to just letting his power come naturally, because he is very strong, he does not need to sell out for power. I think there's always going to be swing and miss, but I think he needs to come out this year and kind of prove that he can find an approach and stick with it and just let the power come.
All right, so keep an eye out for our story on MLB Pipeline on one player from each team that fits this bill that's looking to bounce back in 2022. All right, we want to change focus here a little bit on the MLB Pipeline podcast. We're going to talk some college baseball, some draft prospects. We're into the season now, and as we said earlier in the show, probably the story so far. So much so that it's you know it by only two words: Tommy Tanks, Tommy White homering. Where are we now? He homered nine times in his first eight games, which I believe was what through.
Actually, through nine last in his weekend? First seven, because he went homerless this week in his midweek game. But he has nine homers in eight games, and he's batting .588 with 29 RBI in those eight games.
That's not a bad start. Jim, I know you saw Tommy White. Now, he was on our top 200 draft prospects list last year when he was IMG. He was number 107 on that list. And I know you saw him at the Combine last year, right?
Yeah, I don't have the Combine data in front of me, but I think his exit velocities were as loud as anybody's at the Combine, including the college players. So he stood out. You know, he's kind of your, you know, we see this happen a lot. I mean, he's a guy who could really hit. He was at IMG Academy. He got scouted, but it's an all bat profile for the most part. You know, he's 6'1", 220. If you go to our website, you know, and look at our 2021 draft rankings and Jonathan scouting report, and there's a picture of him at the plate. And he looks kind of like a softball. He's this burly looking softball player, dude. Like, it's not, you know, like, it's not a real super athletic physique. He probably is going to wind up at first base in the long run. He hits right-handed. The right-handed hitting first base profile is probably the least desirable profile. And so what happens in a lot of cases with guys like that, unless they're just, you know, can't miss, no doubt, like, just going to rake, pro teams generally say, go to school, go to college, show us what you could do. I mean, Jonathan, you wrote about him. I think if he was signable for slot, he might have gone in the third or fourth round. But he wanted a seven-figure bonus, and it just, you know, when you're a right-handed hitting potential first baseman in high school, it's hard to get a seven-figure bonus at that point, and then you have to go prove it.
Yeah, I think it was the price tag that really did. There were some teams that really liked the bat. And, you know, and guys that Jim, you and I both talked to who like value their opinion when it comes to that sort of thing. So, I mean, what he's doing now is absolutely insane. That he is hitting well, I don't think would surprise too many Florida scouts. Cause even people who like, oh, I don't like the bot, you know, all the question marks that Jim pointed to were, you know, were valid. But people like the bat. You know, we'll see what he does at the next level. You know, once he gets there, but this is just a certain early indication that he is going to be a bat to really consider when he comes back around, even if it is a first right-handed first base only profile. I mean, I think he has a chance to hit enough that's not going to matter.
Jim, you were right regarding a couple of things. One, the combine and Tommy White's exit velocities there. You'd written that White had more hard hit balls, 15 of them with exit velocities of at least 95 miles an hour, and the greatest average exit velocity, 98.2, than anyone else there on that particular day. It was on a Thursday, and then on Friday, continued to pepper the ball. During the Friday workout, average exit velocity of 98.1 miles per hour trailed only two players. You're also right about the fact that he does look like a softball player in that photo. And I think it doesn't help that he's wearing a hat and not a helmet in that photo. I think that's
probably, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, it's, I mean, and I'm not trying to poke fun at him, but it's not, you know, like generally the guys who get paid out of high school are the guys who are more athletic, and the guys who are bat only, you make them go, you make them go put a batting helmet on and go prove they can hit college.
That's like a picture from like a home run derby or something, right?
I mean, yeah.
The beard also just adds some age.
Yep. And the beer in his hand. No, there's no beer in his hand.
That's no, that did not happen. Tommy White was 18 years old. Don't do that.
He was not. Yeah, he was. Yeah. There's no beer in his hand. All right. Let's look ahead a little bit. Now we have a great tournament this weekend, the Shriners Children's College Classic in Houston. That includes Baylor, LSU, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, and UCLA. That is a pretty stacked tournament. And it also includes, what are we going to say? A half dozen, but what do we say? Five or six here. Do we take out an injured player of the top 100 draft prospects who are participating?
Yes, because Blade Tidwell of Tennessee still has shoulder issues and won't participate. So you officially can see six of MLB Pipeline's top 100 draft prospects for this year's draft at the Shriners Classic, not to mention Dylan Cruz, who we talked about in a recent podcast. You know, mm-hmm. arguably, he'll be in the running to be the number one overall pick next year, and he's also on LSU. But yeah, there's a ton of talent in this tournament.
And you can see them. You don't have to go to Houston to see them. You can watch some games on MLB Network. Also, AT&T Sportsnet Southwest has regional coverage, and we will be streaming those games on MLB.com and the MLB app. So keep an eye out for those this weekend, beginning on Friday. Games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, three each. So, guys, tell us about some of the players to keep an eye on in this one.
A lot of position players, and I think, Jonathan, I think all seven of the prospects are in my domain, right? Like in my half of the draft?
Yeah, I'm going to go get a sandwich. Go ahead.
So LSU, you know, is loaded. You know, we've talked. It feels like we talk every podcast about Jacob Berry, who I think is the best all-around offensive performer in college baseball, transferred from Arizona when his coach, Jay Johnson, moved from Arizona to LSU. I mean, he's a potential – you know, top of the draft type pick. Cade Doty is an infielder on LSU who could go in the first round. He's off to a tremendous start as well. He's one of the national leaders. I think he's got something crazy like 19 or 20 RBIs in eight games, but he's been off to a hot start. Most of these guys are performing really well too. You've got Peyton Graham, an infielder at Oklahoma, who, like Cade Doty, could sneak into the first round. Tennessee, even with Blade Tidwell out, has a couple of outfielders of note. Jordan Beck, who's one of the better all-around athletes in the college crop, and he's making more contact in the early going this year. He's a potential first-rounder. Drew Gilbert, you know, probably more of a second or third-rounder, but like that gamer-type center fielder. And then the other top 100 prospect is Jared McKenzie of Baylor. He's off to a little bit of a slow start, and it's interesting because I think he hit 389, if I remember the number correctly, in his first two seasons at Baylor and then struggled in the Cape Cod League. So guys are trying to figure him out a little bit. And, you know, we didn't mention any Longhorns, but they're the consensus number one team in the country. And they've got, you know, all kinds of talent. Trey Faltini, their shortstop's one of the best defenders in the draft. He's off to a good offensive start. There are some questions about his bat. They have a lefty named Pete Hansen who doesn't light up the radar gun, but nobody ever seems to hit him. He's pitched 11 shutout innings so far this year with 16 strikeouts. And probably their best prospect on the team is a guy who'll be eligible next year, who you guys probably remember and listeners probably remember I kept touting out of high school. Tanner Witt at Texas is going to be an early first-round pick next year. So a ton of talent. Jonathan, you've one Western team in here in your domain, UCLA. Who do you like on the Bruins?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add two things real quickly. You mentioned Dylan Cruz, who, you know, with all the, you know, Cade Doughty and Jacob Berry are off to good starts, but Dylan Cruz is hitting .485 through his first nine games. So he is certainly one to watch. And then Drew Gilbert, who was the sort of lesser guy in Tennessee, has almost 1,400 ops so far. So a lot of good performers, to your point. You know, there are a couple of good position players for UCLA. But the guy and Jared Karros, I think, has been hurt. That's Eric's son, but has, you know, has a chance to hit. And Michael Curiel, who's not off to a great start, but if he hits, he plays shortstop now, probably moves to third. But Max Ratchik is the guy for me that's kind of interesting, and maybe it's just because I saw him in the National High School Invitational with Orange Lutheran. He's not like a huge stuff guy, you know, and he's not projectable, but boy, is he competitive. He, you know, he is a fun guy to watch. I think a lot of people think he's a reliever in the future, but his last start, he threw five shutout innings. He's been pretty good in his first two starts this year. He's got a really good breaking ball. So he'll be fun to watch, even if it's not a, wow, this guy, look, you know, he's a top of the draft kind of guy, but he's going to go right after hitters every time he's out there. So he's the guy from UCLA for me. That's that'll be a fun one to watch.
I'm going to throw one more out there, because I was just looking at their stats, because I was looking, as you were speaking about Max Ratchik, how he was doing, because he also performed well at the PDP League when I was there a couple of years ago. But, you know, last year, you know, you wrote about Thatcher Hurd, who was a potential top two rounds guy, and he wound up being unsignable and wound up going to UCLA. And I just popped the numbers up. Thatcher Hurd, in his first two, or I guess he's made three college appearances now, 12 innings, 25 strikeouts, two walks, four hits. So Thatcher Hurd looks like he's laying some groundwork to go very early in the draft a couple of years down the road.
Jonathan, you scarfed down that sandwich.
Yeah, I was very hungry.
What sandwich from, let's segue from a sandwich to an egg. And Jim, now we have egg. Mayo.
I hate eggs. I hate mayo. Like, I'm done.
So. See, now I feel more comfortable now.
And Jim will refuse to answer.
Get off my lawn, Jim Chalice.
So we have a question from Just an Egg, as we're going to wrap up with the mailbag. This comes from the handle at rhouseit, who asks, are we not giving Grayson Rodriguez enough hype? I've never seen grades like that on a pitcher before. And could the success of guys like him and Jameson Taillon entice more GMs to roll the dice on prep righties?
I mean, my first instinct was to kind of get defensive, because I'm like, I think we hype him. He's the only, you know, on our 2021 list, he's the only pitching prospect in the top 10. He's the top pitching prospect in baseball. But I get the point. I think that he is a guy who he hasn't flown under the radar in futures game, and obviously a top 10 prospect, but he may not get enough credit for how good his stuff is. You know, referring to his grades, you know, six or better on three pitches with the fastball, slider, and change. He throws at least an average curve, and he's got really good command. So, you know, he is a very, you know, maybe he should be more in that rarefied, quote unquote, special pitching prospect stratosphere. I don't know. You know, I don't know, Jim, can you be sort of underappreciated and be a top 10 prospect?
Yeah, I kind of looked at it the same way. I don't feel like he's underappreciated. I was going back and looking, and I mean, in recent years, I mean, and this isn't necessarily going to inspire confidence, and we've had high school pitchers with plus pitches all over the place, like Mackenzie Gore and Forrest Whitley, who right now are not at the height of their powers. But I think he is pretty well regarded. You know, he might get overshadowed a little bit, honestly, because he's in the same organization as Adley Rutschman. And when you can't talk about the Orioles, I mean, without mentioning Adley Rutschman, so maybe he loses a little bit of limelight there. But I feel like he's I mean, I think he's everybody's consensus best pitching prospect in baseball. So I feel like he's pretty highly valued. And, you know, the high school, you know, teams rolling the dice on prep right-handers part of the question. I don't know if it's going to change things. I mean, you have teams that are, you know, very leery of the injury risk with high school right-handers. I would say that all pitchers get hurt. And so that's a risk with all of them. Maybe it's a little bit more pronounced, but it's not like high school right-handers get hurt all the time and the college right-handers stay healthy. And I was just looking at, you know, if you look at some of the best pitchers in baseball last year, Zach Wheeler, Max Fried, Lucas Giolito, just to name three, those guys were all high school first round picks. Two of whom had Tommy John surgery before they got to the big leagues. It wound up being pretty good. So I mean, I've said this a million times. I think talent's talent, and if you think a high school right-hander is the most talented guy on your board, you should take him in the first round. And a lot of times, I think the best values in the draft are high school pitchers in the second round who last 20 to 30 picks more than they should just because of teams worried about the risk. But I don't think Grayson Rodriguez all by himself is necessarily going to change that. And like I said, I mean, you can look in the big leagues and see plenty of early round high school pitchers who are good, and teams still are reluctant to take high school pitchers, especially righties, in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, the data on that says don't take a high school right-hander. I mean, don't take a high school pitching in the first round. The percentage of those guys that make it to the big leagues is lower than any other category. But what I think that doesn't take into account is the point that you just made is, well, what about the guys who are considered first-round talents but ended up going in the second, third round instead, and also the guys who like thought, well, I'm a first round caliber player, and then they don't go, and then they go to college, and then they become the college pitchers who do better in the first round. You know, so that doesn't happen all that often, but it happens enough where I think there are some caveats to that. But by and large, I agree. Like, you know, one Grayson Rodriguez, you know, if you're willing to take a high school right-hander, you're going to do it anyway. Grayson Rodriguez's success is not going to suddenly push a team into taking a high school right-hander when they weren't going to.
All right. Thank you for that question, Just an Egg. Thanks again to Kevin Reese for joining us today. And thanks to everybody for listening. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks again, everybody. See you next week.